Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
It's Radio City Talk. It's Mental Health Monday. We're back for 2020. My name's Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. Thank you for joining us once again. A brand new year, a brand new decade as well. And of course, the conversations around mental health continue. We're coming off the back of the FA Cup weekend and the Mental Health Minute at all of the 32 FA Cup third round ties. Hopefully that will make a difference. I've got some signposted for you at the end of the programme as well if you want to find mental health services close to you. Two guests in the studio for the first programme of 2020. They're going to be talking about an organisation that they have set up. Born once again here in Liverpool, where wonderful things happen when it comes to mental health. And there's a really interesting story behind it and the difference it might make to your life and the people around you. We've got Dr. Edward Lynch and Dr. Toby Fox. Ed and Toby join us on the programme. Thank you both for your time. Great to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And to you as well.
We're going to talk about Sofron.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the name Sofron, where it comes from and how it makes a difference. First and foremost, let's talk about the title. Ed, of your names, your doctors. Just tell us a little bit about your background, Ed.
Yeah, so, well, I'm a Scouser, born and bred, big Red fan. I went to Bluecoat School as my secondary, so after that, you typically only get one offer when you do medicine, and mine happened to be in Liverpool as well. So, yeah, just my luck. But no, I went there, and then I also applied for Liverpool for my posting as a doctor, so that's how I got to where I am.
So you're working in Liverpool as a doctor at the moment. And Toby, tell us about yourself.
So I am not a doctor just yet. I am about 6 months away from becoming one. So I'm a fifth-year medical student at the University of Liverpool at the moment. The fact that I'm actually going to be a doctor in 6 months' time is quite scary, but exciting at the same time. I'm from London originally, and I came up to Liverpool, obviously, to go to Liverpool University. And that's where I met Ed, who's my best mate. And, together, we've recently started off on this journey creating this company around March time.
How did he get ahead of you then, time-wise?
So he was in the year above me,
right?
At university. See, I took a gap year, and so that's the reason why I was a year behind, but we're the same age.
You've got a big 6 months ahead of you, right? That final year.
Yeah, it's scary.
That's a lot of work, right?
It is, but Liverpool is quite strange in the sense that they do their final exams in fourth year, whereas most medical schools, they do it in fifth year. So we basically did our final exams last year, so that's all done and dusted, and now we can kind of relax a little bit. Now it's just about going to placement and learning the more practical side of things rather than having everything so much focused on learning about the theory.
So when I went to university, this is way, way back, you kind of specialised in a particular field and you picked something you were interested in, and then by the end of it, that's where your qualification came and your accreditation and so on and so forth. We're talking about mental health, but presumably you guys have been, when you've been studying and learning and looking at becoming doctors, you've looked at everything and anything when it comes to how the body works.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, when you're at university, it's strange. You do psychiatric placements, but you're looking really at people who clinically have a strong diagnosis of, say, paranoid schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, and you're typically seeing inpatients, whereas we know actually in the community that there's so many more people who suffer from mental health problems. And I think perhaps that's something that medical school across the nation could improve on, where we assess people's mental health more broadly rather than just typically inpatients.
That's interesting. Was mental health something which you were kind of big on before you went into your studies? Was it something that you became aware of more and more as part of the work you were doing and the training you were receiving?
So I've always been really interested in psychology and philosophy too, ever since a really young age. And so when I went to university to do medicine, straight away, mental health, psychiatry, that just struck a chord with me. When I would go to psychiatry placement, when I would speak to all of the doctors there, you know, when you just click with someone because you're sharing this commonality, this interest that you have for psychology, and straight away I was like, right, I know that this is the field that I want to go into. I want to become a psychiatrist, and how it works is after you finish medical school, you do your first 2 years as a junior doctor before you then decide whether or not you want to do medicine, surgery, or GP. Then after you choose medicine, as I would choose in my case, you then do a few more years of basic training, And then after that, you choose which speciality you want to go into, in which case I would choose psychiatry for myself. So it's a long road until you actually
and you're
become
also launching
a consultant psychiatrist.
This new project as well, which is going to take up a great deal of your time. You've got a busy 6 months. Sounds like you've got a
work-life
busy few
balance.
Years
exactly.
after that.
Yeah,
I imagine, absolutely. In terms of yourselves as well, I understand there was a close friend who took their own life as well, which must have brought so many of the conversations you'd had, you know, the textbooks and the training that you had must have really brought back that absolutely to the fore and the realities of mental health.
So, I mean, unfortunately, it was a lad we've known quite a few years. We met him in school. Well, I met him in school. Now, he moved down to Bristol. So, you know, he's a top student, doing really well, completed 3 years at university, then went on to do a master's. And, you know, he was doing so well in his dissertation that the university actually said to him, look, we're going to give you a distinction straight off the bat without you having actually submitted it yet, which apparently is a very, very rare process. But then he submitted his master's dissertation and, yeah, the next day he killed himself. So at that point, you know, I started thinking, in my position, what more can be done? And that's when me and Toby started having discussions about what we can do to start helping other people, you know. And he was down in Bristol. We're quite fortunate in Liverpool. We have decent access to services up here. And that's one of the first things that we noticed across the country. There was geographical discrepancies to what services you could access. So that was one of the big things that we wanted to, you know, address in the first instance.
Obviously, so much of the conversation we have around mental health is about signposting and educating people around mental health, but then getting them into services. And often people will say, well, maybe the service they got into wasn't right for them at that particular time. Now, that's often difficult for people like myself, who's trying to encourage people to have those conversations, speak to the GP. If then people have negative experiences when they make that connection, that's quite a damaging thing, because then if you then go around saying, well, I tried to get help and it wasn't the right help for me, that becomes a problem, doesn't it? Because people will then think, well, you say there's help out there, but such and such a person said that help wasn't available for them. So we've really got to make sure that those connections and that accessibility is working, and it is working for as many people as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest issues that we found is we fundamentally think the whole system is wrong. You know, if we treat the mind as a leg, what's happening is people are breaking their legs, you know, they're breaking their minds, and then we say, now let's treat you. Why are we doing this when we can stop people from breaking their legs, breaking their minds, you know? So one of the key values that we have as a company is that we focus a lot of our attention on prevention for as many people as possible, you know, stopping people from breaking those legs in the first place.
That's a really interesting side of things, and we're going to talk about it now as in terms of what you're doing with Sophron. That's Sophron. The name sounds like something off The Apprentice.
Yeah, it does. So the name comes from a Greek word, and the Greek word is sophrosyne, which basically describes an individual who has a well-balanced mind. And when someone has that as a characteristic, it brings out other very good characteristics in the individual. So that's the
who knew that?
You know what? I saw someone post that word, like a screenshot of the dictionary, on my Instagram.
Right.
I thought, that's an interesting word. And it was exactly the same time we were trying to think up a name for the company. And so we took sophrosyne. I looked up the different kind of derivations of it, and then Sophron popped up. We thought, you know what? It fits perfectly. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
So Sophron is the name of the company, the parent name of the company, but the app which we're in the process of developing at the moment is called Life.
L-Y-F-E.
L-Y-F-E, yeah.
Easier to get a trademark and copyright on that, right? Yeah, okay, I'm well with you on that one. In terms of prevention, if you look at something as specific as suicide, and then you think, well, when you talk about the prevention of suicide, you know, there seems to be so much work that goes on to, you know, can you encourage somebody maybe to call the Samaritans? But then if you jump a step back from that, can you get them to the point where they tackle maybe a depressive ongoing episodes maybe? If we take a step back from that, can we get them to recognise potentially when those episodes might be about to start? Can, you know, when we talk about preventative work, how far back down the chain can you have to create a life full of wellness that doesn't go down those pathways? Or when it does go down the pathways towards stress and anxiety that might lead to depression and eventually potentially a suicide. How do we stop that at source? How do we begin to pinpoint that, because that is a wholesale change, isn't it? And, you know, from a physical point of view, we're talking now about eating healthier, you know, breathing in fresher air, exercise, so that when you're talking about the cancers and the obesities, those things never get chance to get going in the first place. Where can you start when it comes to mental health? How far back down the line can you start?
I mean, from babies, really, isn't it? You know, childhood, education, parenting all has a massive impact on any person's, you know, upbringing. And that's where a lot of issues can stem from. You know, we see patients quite a bit who have, you know, troubled childhoods. But I think one of the key things is actually educating people about what they can do. Because a lot of people, you know, we talk to people all the time who, apart from fitness, diet and nutrition, and, you know, maybe meditation, people don't really know how would they go looking about their mental health, or even their physical health, but, you know, especially mental health. People don't really know what they're supposed to be doing.
Does it require like a revolution? We talk about the FA Cup minute that happened this weekend, where people might go, oh, I might read up on that. And some people might read up on it. Other people might go, oh, that wasn't for me, or, well, it was only a minute, so what do you want me to do with it? Is it something that is easily trained in people? When people do see things or understand or be taught how to spot mental health, are you finding that they're open to it? That they suddenly go, oh, right, yeah, that makes sense now. This is something I can bring into my life.
Yes, but then going back a step, talking about, like, is a revolution needed? So a trend that we're seeing at the moment within healthcare, within medicine, is that whilst historically speaking, we've always operated from what's called a deficit model of healthcare, in the sense that someone might have a health of -8, and as healthcare professionals, we're trying to move them up to a -2. Well, what we're trying to do with Sofron, with Life, and what we're seeing as a general shift happening at the moment is a shift from a deficit model of health to an optimization model of health, where instead it's actually about moving someone from a +2 to a +8. And this is all very much akin to positive psychology. And positive psychology as a discipline has only been around for 20 years or so. I think it was like 1998 where it first came out, and was introduced by this guy, Martin Seligman. And basically what positive psychology is about is it's trying to undergo the scientific study and work out how we can ensure that individuals and groups of people thrive and have fulfilling lives.
So the reason the medical profession is in the first scenario, almost the plate spinning scenario, where, you know, some are starting to wobble a bit, but you can get them back on track, but eventually, you know, they're going to start, you know, wobbling again. Is that born out of necessity? Is that born out of lack of resource? Is that born out of, well, this is the way the medical world has always looked at things? You know, that shift to the optimization model, I think you said.
It's definitely a cultural shift,
yeah,
isn't it?
Is that about people just deciding that we're going to do things differently from now on?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because a lot of our population, we do have an aging population, and they still have not fixed mindsets, but sometimes people are less open to new ideas, and trying to implement what is essentially a culture shift can be really difficult.
Yeah, and then just to add to that as well, especially with mental health, look, there's so much stigma around it that as soon as you've got some information which might be useful to an individual, straight away, people get their defences up. They don't want to know, especially if they don't have a mental health condition. But even if they do, people don't like to think that they have something quote-unquote wrong with them. And so creating this shift is very hard. But then what we're seeing at the moment is, and this is really interesting, people are consuming the educational content in very different ways compared to how they did historically. Historically speaking, they get it from books, universities, and now what we're seeing in this modern age, people are consuming content through the likes of YouTube. And so as a company, we feel really strongly about creating this shift through education. And that's why, as a company, 50% of our profits go towards developing educational programs to create a grassroots approach to health and well-being in schools.
The three main domains of health, let me get this right, Ed, biological, psychological, and social.
You smashed it.
Health.
That's it.
Do I get like a degree for that? No. What's social health?
Social health. So that looks at, you know, so you've got social determinants of health, and this can be anything from your socioeconomic background, so where you live, the sort of job you have, the lifestyle that you live. It covers pretty much anything in between your physical health, which is, you know, your body composition, what you eat, and from your psychological health, and anything between sort of falls into that social health category.
Yeah, environmental health also kind of overlaps with that category because, you know, if you live in a neighbourhood which is just horrible to live in, that's obviously going to have an impact on you. So.
Now, but in terms of that now, when you fill in a form, you can find out where that person lives. You can see if that's an area maybe of deprivation, maybe low educational attainment, maybe poor air quality. You can check someone's height and you can check someone's weight. This idea of maybe your social health, have you come from a home with maybe a single parent family? Have you come from a home where maybe there have been a patterns of domestic abuse? Have you witnessed terrible things in your life?
Absolutely.
When we start asking those seems questions, they almost seem like we're kind of gegging in on someone's private information. But actually, from what you've said there, it's almost a suggestion that that information might be quite important to spot potential signs of problems in young people.
Absolutely. The thing is, a lot of people won't want to open up to that information. You know, you can ask those questions, but typically we could only it would only be right to ask those questions if we had a certain rapport with that person.
Sure.
You know, and I think it's all about how appropriate that question is, in that it's got to be in the right setting and it's got to be asked in the right way. So I think if we can do it, and typically friends, you know, one of the biggest things about mental health for me is simply asking someone, you know, are you okay, and asking why again. You know, if they give a bit of information, just ask, you know, appropriately, ask again for a little bit more information. That can really help.
You guys obviously are looking at this from a technological point of view, because we're in the modern era now where technology is so crucial as well. But I guess you guys are aware of the, it's not a hypocrisy as such, but that balance you've got to strike between making it a technological solution when so much of it appears to be a human connection, human connections between people that can make that difference. How are you looking, Toby, to strike that balance?
Yeah, so building on that point that Ed just mentioned, when it comes to social health, I think everyone understands that you need to have relationships in your life in order to have that kind of that aspect of social health dealt with. But on top of that, you need to have the right kinds of relationships as well, meaningful relationships. And what we're seeing at the moment with the likes of social media on the rise, Instagram especially, is that people have these many friendships or connections at a superficial level.
That's the quote mark, friendships,
yeah. But then at a kind of deeper, more meaningful level, those relationships are missing in people's lives. And it comes down to that human connection, like you say, Mick.
So I deleted my Facebook and my Instagram because I thought, you know what, this isn't really even real.
It's probably a good decision.
But then I thought, what is that conversation with somebody who finds a great deal of fun and interest, or perceived fun and interest, in a Facebook account, and they've got 3,000 friends and they can find out what they're all up to? How do you say to somebody that those friends don't really exist, or they're people you now know, but that sort of that DNA thing, that Neanderthal urge that you have to almost connect with a human being, you won't find it here, because so many people now use that social media as their social life, if you like, and that's a habit which we picked up very, very quickly. And I kind of get a sense it's going to be a very difficult habit to kick.
There's 2 points there. The reason why we've picked it up as a habit is because, one, it's so easy, and, you know, it stimulates the brain in such, you know, you get like we're almost addicted to that process of being on social media. But secondly, I just think we need to engage with strong personal relationships where you're meeting that person in person, you know. And this is something that we try to advocate through the app Life. You know, although we're using a digital platform to push out, you know, the offers on the app, we're actually doing real life activities, building strong relationships with people in person. You know, I think so long as we utilize tech in the right way and we are pushing people to have real life relationships, that's the way forward.
So if you're using something like Life, give us an example then of how that would work.
Yeah, sure. So Life in its first sort of run through, it's going to be offers on healthy discounts around Liverpool. So you'll engage with any healthy activity which we've vetted as improving your total well-being, which also therefore has a massive impact on your mental health. So let's take an easy example. You want to go cycling, you want to do a bit of spinning. Okay, well, there's a number of cycle studios around Liverpool who have got a retail space on our app. They offer a discount to the user to go and do that activity. So the user goes on there, they get the discount, and they go and do that activity. Hopefully in that process, they'll meet people, they do a bit of physical health, they build on, you know, the biological health. And then because they're meeting people, they're building on that social side of health as well. Mm. As an impact through all of that, their mental health should be improved.
And how are you able, through the app, to sort of check up on that? Otherwise, you know, so it doesn't just become another sort of discount sort of app. There's an actual measurement, if you like, in how people can see that their mental health has potentially...
I mean, it's a good question, Mick. We don't want to give all our secrets away. No, so that's the very first... What do you want to call
iteration.
It? Iteration of the app. We are going to filter in extra features down the line, where especially around safeguarding our users. So, I mean, 10 years down the line, we want to have it at like a new form of social media, where you'd engage with people in a completely new way, very much in person. But the safeguarding thing's the next thing on our list to implement into the app. So let's say so the app tracks people's health, essentially asks some simple questions, which is based on medical criteria, but it's dressed up in a very, very nice way. You know, it might say, have you recently stopped enjoying things that you previously enjoyed? And that's a certain symptom which ties into depression. And through these, it asks you questions every day, every other day. And through that tracking of those questions, we can sort of get a picture of people's mental health, people's physical health. And then through that, we can appropriately refer them to services across Liverpool.
Yeah. I'm just going to ask you a question here. At what age should a child be exposed to technology, screen technology, phone technology? I think I know how you're going to respond to this one.
Have you seen an article by any chance?
Yes, I have. I think it's a fascinating article, and I think it throws up an issue now in a world where, and we've talked about the habit of, you know, picking up Facebook friends, the habit now of throwing an iPad in front of a child of 18 months, you know. You can buy attachments that attach to prams now, and you can put on a little arm that just puts an iPad down in front of a child's face. And I know you've got strong thoughts on this.
We saw, well, we'll come back to that article in a second, but the other day I saw a child in hospital who had a book in front of him. He was probably 4 years old. He had a book in front of him, and he attempted to swipe to turn the page as if it was an iPad.
I was just like, my word.
Yeah. I mean, that just shows, doesn't it?
Of course. But the same thing happened when I saw a kid at Alton Towers. Somebody took a photo of him, and the kid grabbed the camera to look at the image that was being taken. But it was a proper camera.
Right.
So it didn't have a screen on the back, and
right,
it wasn't.
Right, right.
And he was like, what's this?
What's
absolute nonsense.
Well, have you seen the monkeys taking selfies in like Bali and Thailand?
yeah.
They can use phones nowadays.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures.
But so that article, not terribly happy with that.
Yeah.
Words were sort of misconstrued slightly.
It's miscommunication.
Yeah. I mean...
I called you Tobias for a start.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because how do you measure... So the gold standard of medical evidence is something what's called an RCT, a randomized controlled trial. Now, to look at the actual effects that technology would have on somebody's brain long term, there's so many different factors there to factor in. How do you say, yes, it's definitely that one thing, the technology? So it is very difficult. But what we have seen is people who struggle to focus, people struggle to engage with real life activities. And this is sort of hinted at the fact that technology is having a big impact on that. And when you're very sociably, when you're a child and you're very socially, what would you call it? You're receptive to your environment. You know, you're learning so much about how you live. Technology can have a massive impact on that child.
Yeah.
You know, so
what I've got,
you've
got
to be careful.
But I've got a 5-year old, and when I'm out with the 5-year old, she doesn't have a phone, she doesn't have a tablet. But I always almost get the sense the whole world is around her, and her whole experience is literally everything that she can see, smell, touch, feel, and everything in between. And I always think that as soon as you put something into the palm of their hands...
It's all gone.
Suddenly, yeah, that world...
Mm. Yeah, fine, it's all gone.
The world might open up within that little tiny screen.
Yeah.
But that entire sensory experience...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a great point. You know, we're actually a little bit scared with the likes of, you know, VR, AI.
Mm.
These highly immersive environments which draw you out of the real world. You know, we can only live in the real world. You've still got to eat, sleep... bodily functions. I've got in trouble past before for saying further things there, but I'll be careful. So yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? The way you described iPad as a world, because it is.
I think the most important thing is realizing that technology and the development of technology can have huge benefit, especially when it comes to education, things like that. So even though we're saying we're a bit worried about AI, AR, things like that, we do appreciate that.
They have their place.
They have their place. Absolutely. And they're going to be a huge help to our society. But then at the same time, it's about trying to understand where the balance is. Mm. Where is that point where actually it starts becoming more negative, especially to someone's health?
In terms of the work that you're doing now through Sofron, what's the best way for people listening to this to sort of keep abreast of where you're up to? You mentioned the app before and the developments. Where's the best place for people to go for that?
Best place would be to go to our Instagram, which is The Life Club, and that's life spelled with a Y. And we're going to be posting updates very regularly, Instagram stories, telling people where they can expect to get discounts from, and telling people about the most recent updates with the app. So that's the best place to go.
I mean, we're a relatively new company, so we're actually going through, we're looking at branding options, and we're trying to come up with a tone of voice. So we're trying to have our voice in the same sort of direction so that people know where to go. We're unsure whether to incorporate what else we're doing with schools. We're trying to streamline the process. So I think it's going to be difficult to know exactly what it's going to look like. Sure. We are still a new company. But yeah, at the moment, Instagram's a place to look. Hopefully we can open up other channels for people to follow us more easily with blog posts on our website as well. Yeah.
Good stuff. We're looking forward to maybe in a year's time we can have a catch up and find out where you've been up to, what the year has brought you as well.
Wicked.
You're the first guest of 2020. Maybe you'll be a bit of first guest of 2021. Thank you both for your time. Dr. Edward Lynch, Dr. Ed, and Toby Fox as well. Sofron is the name of the company. Instagram, a good place to go. The Life Club, that's life with a Y. The Life Club, do check that out. And I'm sure we'll catch up with the guys again very soon. Ed, Toby, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday. Don't forget, if you want to find mental health services close to you, you can use the database available on the Hub of Hope, hubofhope.co.uk. Use the postcode there or your location on your device to find mental health services close to you. My name's Mick Coyle. It's Mental Health Monday. You can drop me an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk.
Rock, sport, and talk.
This is Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.